Welcome to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
Today's opening tip, Michael Jordan and Denny Hamlin are joining forces to start a NASCAR team with Bubba Wallace as the driver. Bubba, the only black driver at NASCAR's top level, and Hamlin was the first NASCAR driver to be endorsed by Jordan Brand. Vince, how cool is this?
I mean, it's cool. It's just Brand Jordan expanding yet into another sport. So, I think it's great. I'm sure there's some folks who won't like it, but MJ being MJ and Bubba Wallace doing what he's been doing, I like it.
Yeah, just a couple of country boys. Hey, don't forget, MJ is a country boy. North Carolina, that is him at his heart. So I'm not surprised that he's entering into racing.
Absolutely. Bubba Wallace been very popular in my family for, I think, the last 6 or 7 years. Yeah. So I know that there was a lot of excitement when this announcement came out yesterday. Welcome, guys, to The Jump. We are coming to you live from the Advent Health Arena, located on ESPN's Wide World of Sports campus at Walt Disney's World Resort in Florida, site of the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. I'm Rachel Nichols, alongside NBA champ Richard Jefferson and the future Hall of Famer, the legend, Mr. Vince Carter. Welcome, gentlemen. Coming up, we're going to talk about NBA Commissioner Adam Silver gave an interview to CNN that said his best guess for the start of next season is looking like January at this point. We will discuss the idea of that a little later in the show. But first, we begin with tonight's Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals. Going to happen right here on this court. Lakers-Nuggets. Lakers fans, of course, still buzzing over Anthony Davis's game-winning three. Pretty much no time left on the clock to win Game 2, undoubtedly the biggest shot of AD's career so far. And it got our staff wondering where Anthony's shot compares to the other memorable Lakers playoff buzzer beater game winners. So I want to run them all back.
Oh, I love when we cue that music.
Love the music. 87 finals, Magic versus the Celtics.
Hook 'em. Woo!
There were four Celtics players, and he was like, eh.
Well, Magic is 6'10". Don't let that 6'9" stuff fool you. Magic's 6'10". Look at that.
Shoot, Magic is Magic, man. Wasn't he, like, didn't he play center that time?
Yeah.
That series? Absolutely.
No,
he's the man.
No,
that's the series.
This
is his rookie year.
He did his rookie. No, 87 was his rookie year, Vince. We're not that old.
2002 Western Conference Finals, Robert Horry hits the game-winning three to beat the Kings.
My poor guy, Mike Bibby, my Phoenix guy. I fell for him.
Robert Horry,
he walked right into it. Yeah, he walked right into that.
Oh, Chris Webber trying. Oh.
We got post-game reaction from this one. Take a listen here. Of course, Jack.
Lucky shot, that's all. You don't need to have a skills or some, you know, in that kind of situation. Just throw it and if it goes in.
It wasn't no luck shot. I've been doing that for all my career, so he should know. He better read a paper or something.
Oh, the good old days. 2004, this is one of my favorites. D-Fish, fishy rim, 0.4 seconds versus the Spurs. One of the best NBA commercials ever. This got turned into.
Oh, the fishy rim. We got to bring that commercial back.
Right?
Look at Bruce's face.
Exactly. How many times you think he would make that just trying to make it?
Right.
No. Hey, Robert Horry was on the court for that one.
Yeah, he's on the court for a lot of them.
That's right.
Giveth and taketh away. 2006, Kobe versus the Suns. Never gets old.
No, get to your spot, kids. That's all he was trying to do. He wasn't looking at the rim. He wasn't trying to get by. He was just trying to get to his spot.
He said, I'm going right there, and I'm going to pull up to the fade.
Nothing you could do. Tip your hat.
Now, he practicing that would make it thousands
of times.
Oh, my God.
Thousands of times, by the way.
Yeah, that's why he was just trying to get to his spot.
By the way, they had Jack Nicholson in the virtual sort of screen here earlier this week.
Did.
I was a big fan of that. 2010 Western Conference Finals. He'll always be Ron Artest to me.
Oh, look at that. I love it when you see Kobe like just attacking his teammates right there. Look at that.
Good old Ron. Gotta love him.
So so good. Now, see, Lakers fans, I think, would add the AD shot to that. I think that goes in the pantheon.
Yeah.
We do have to show some love to guys, by the way, the Nikola Jokic, because he hit two extremely clutch buckets to give the Nuggets the lead twice in the final minute of the game.
Just big boy AD. Just big boy in that. This one was special. Because if you don't know and you don't really observe his game, he does that. He's trying to tip that ball in and trying to make that shot. His touch is the best I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely. And RJ, to add to that, I mean, that's what I would like him to do, is see him do the rest of this series. It's just, hey, use your weight. Throw your weight around. Demand a double team to create shots for yourself and other people. So, yeah, I mean, he was clutch.
Look at those numbers. They scored the last 22 points of the game. People say big men don't have a place in this league. They just got to adjust it.
Well, that's what's so fascinating, right? Because we've been having this conversation. Right. Well, Vince, that was what I was about to ask you. We've been having this conversation about Joel Embiid, right, where he said, I want it to come down to me at the end of games, especially after Jimmy Butler left. And it just didn't seem like he was able to punch that button and be that guy this season. But Jokic can do that, right, Vince?
Absolutely. I mean, Jokic can play at any level of the floor. You can play him mid-range. Obviously, he can post up and he can shoot the three. You can put him anywhere, mid-post, pitch post, whatever you choose to call it. And he can make plays for not just himself, but for everyone else. I mean, you know, I like to see it. Give him the ball on that logo and just let him do the turnaround hook jump shot.
And in turn, Anthony Davis, right, Richard?
Well, and I think that's the new adjustment. And even when we talk about Joel Embiid, like, he can shoot threes. Like, he can play on the elbow. And I think that is more of what you see the hybrid centers now. You got to have that post game. You got to have that ability to dominate, because you can do things up close by the rim that no other player can when you have that size. And Anthony Davis, look, this man's shooting step back threes at 6'11". Mm-hmm. He's coming off curls. Look at that, for game winners at 6'11". But also, you get him down on the block, and that hook shot, the touch around the ability to force a double team, that's, I think, the new version of the big men.
I mean, seeing those guys go at it.
And let me say this real quick, guys, to add to AD. Remember, he played the guard position in high school, so he's very familiar, and he moves around like a guard. So now when he has this growth spurt and he's 6'10", 6'11", he has the advantage because he can still think like a guard and play like a guard to some of these bigs who've always been five men throughout their lives.
Right.
Yeah, I'm waiting on my growth spurt.
I was going to say, he grew 6 or 7 inches in 1 year, which I think could still happen to me, Vince. I don't know. It could happen.
No,
you don't know.
It's not happening. It's not.
Just crush my dreams, Richard.
It's over.
That's fine.
Yeah,
here's what The Jump recommends for today. It's over. See, when Vince Carter says it's over.
Yeah, it's over.
It's over.
Yeah.
Jump recommends for today. Acclaimed sports writer Jeff Perlman shared some stories from his forthcoming book, Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Lakers Dynasty, with ESPN.com. I got the book right here because I'm fancy and I got an advanced copy.
Oh.
It's available everywhere starting today. But I do want to share a really great portion with you guys. I'm going to do a little storytelling here.
Oh, okay.
A little
here
story
we go.
Time, right?
Yeah.
All right. So this was talking about the beginning of the Kobe, Shaq era. It says, the assembled talent before Del Harris was breathtaking. Harris asked each man to stand and introduce himself. Shaquille O'Neal, Jolly and Giggly. He stood first. He nodded. He said, what's up? I'm Shaq. Let's do this. One by one, the other men followed. Hey, I'm Derek Fisher, rookie, little ol' Arkansas, ready to get to work. Next, Knicks Van Exel, fourth year here. Next, Eddie Jones, I'm from Florida, went to Temple. Next, yo, I'm Kobe Bryant. I'm from Pennsylvania, went to Lower Merion High School, dominated everything. I just wanted y'all to know, nobody's gonna punk me. I'm not gonna let anyone in the NBA punk me, so be warned. Vince, is that the most Kobe thing you have ever heard? And what was it like to play against these teams?
I mean, first of all, just listen to how Kobe thought in a meeting, in an introduction meeting. And I think setting the tone, letting those guys know, hey, this is who I am, and this is how I think, and everybody's going to follow suit. We know how Shaq was one of the most, if not the most dominant big men to play the game. So it was tough because they both demanded double teams, the attention. And then to add a Derek Fisher, Robert Horry, Eddie Jones. I mean, it's a laundry list. Brian Shaw, there's a laundry list. Rick Fox. There's a laundry list of guys that you can name that they made you pay when you double. You either have to worry about the three-point shooter, or you had to worry about the swing to who? Kobe Bryant, or the swing to the post to Shaq. What do you do? It was just tough to guard.
What do? You win three championships. That's what you do, right?
That's exactly what you do.
I have post-traumatic stress from these guys. My rookie year, I'm going against these guys. Staples had just opened. It was a beautiful, brand-new arena, and you're trying to go against the Lakers, and there wasn't much that you can do because I could do this. Don't tell anybody. Hey, but this is what it is. When you got to play against Kobe and Shaq, like they were like our heroes, and they were superheroes. And when you got on the court, they played like superheroes. The first year, my rookie year, we were just happy to be there and playing against the purple and gold.
Well, look, the idea that Kobe would when Vince Carter says you're old, then really, you're Richard, old. It's over
yeah,
for you.
You've been playing since Staples been open? Yeah, you're old.
2000s. I didn't play. So one of us played in the 90s. Let's just going to say that. One of us going to play in the 90s, and it wasn't me.
Well, two of us set has been around in the NBA since the 90s.
That's true. That's me. Okay. Vince and I were talking before the show about something, a story we worked on together during his rookie year. So,
yeah.
What can I tell you? Kobe introduced himself to you, Vince. How do you remember meeting Kobe Bryant?
Well, I met Kobe in high school, and he came onto our AAU team, and he walked in, and he really didn't say much, and he came off the bench originally, and as our sixth man to our team, so that tells you our team was pretty good. And then you add a 16, 17-year-old Kobe Bryant, and he comes in as our point guard, shooting at half court, jump shots, shoots an air ball the first time. The second time he comes down, he shoots at half court. He makes it. What statement do you need to take to make after that?
Yep. But he did not walk into your team and say, no one's going to punk me. So I guess that's just reserved for the Lakers.
He's like, so I'm show y'all who I am.
I'll show you. Exactly. He did it with that shot. Thank you so much. Coming up, Richard and Vince are going to explain how the Celtics hack the Heat zone in Game 3. Stick around for that. We'll be right back.
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today.
Miami's lead in this best of seven conference final is now 2-1 for Boston Celtics. Right back in this series.
Now we really see what we're made of.
All hail King Cole, first of the name, long may reign.
Got downhill, Bam says get it out of here.
Pressure cooker, that's the known to bustle up a cone and make a diamond. Too sick, me and Rota Reaganomics, too sick.
Here's Tatum, runs, and throws it down.
We're family. We won't ever let anything come in between that. We got a tremendous opportunity, and nothing's going to stop us from trying to maximize that.
I had to tighten the fuck up, but I'm here for the crown.
Tomorrow at 8:30 Eastern, Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. The Heat hold the lead 2-1 in the series, but anything could happen. 8:30 Eastern, I'm going to be on the sidelines. It'll be so much fun. An NBA countdown will get you ready on ESPN Deportes and the app. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols here with Richard Jefferson, Vince Carter. We will stick, gentlemen, with the Eastern Conference Finals because after struggling to figure out Miami's zone in the first two games of the series, the Celtics much more effective against it in Game 3. So, leave you a little context here. Boston shot 30% against the zone in the first two games, 59% in Game 3. Richard, how'd they do it? How'd they hack the zone?
Well, I think they were a little bit more patient. I think the spacing, getting to the key spots, like the zone is not complicated. Jason Williams did an amazing breakdown on Countdown about the zone. I actually texted him and talked about how impressive it was because all you have to do is get patient. You have to work together. This is not a search out my shot. This is not a I'm going to go ISO. You have to work. You have to be on a string together. And the Boston Celtics, and again, adding Gordon Hayward to that, a guy that understands what Brad Stevens is doing. He is a movement guy in general, and he's not constantly searching out a shot. I think the combination of all those things slowed them down, and they did a much better job.
Well, RJ, Rachel, the two things for me, I would say, first of all, having Gordon Hayward, another passer, is great to have for their offense. But the two keys for me was having a body moving through the center of the paint. That person has to be accounted for one. Mm-hmm. For two, they're not just throwing the ball and it's moving around the perimeter. The ball is actually being penetrated into the center of the defense where they have to collapse and you're making plays. So not only are guys running through the paint where you have to account for it with the ball movement, like you said, RJ, but the ball is being actually, the ball is being dribbled into the center of paint, finding open guys or getting layups. And now guys are kind of on a swivel and you have to make a decision, and that's tough to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I was a little surprised it took the Celtics into the third game to make this adjustment, just because the Heat played more zone defense than anyone else in the NBA all season by a lot. So it was not a shock. I know they didn't show it in some of the early rounds of the playoffs, but certainly them breaking it out was not a surprise to someone who's as good at scouting his opponent as Brad Stevens. But personnel-wise, they did not have Gordon back until game three. So that might have been, as you guys note, one of the keys, even if they knew they were expecting it. I am so fascinated to see how these teams come out tomorrow night. I can't call it. We'll talk to you guys on tomorrow's show about, hey, make a prediction. But I think what's so fun about this Heat-Celtics series is we're three games in and I have no idea who's going to win, which is the best way sports can happen.
And that's the beauty of it. Yeah, it's going to go back and forth.
Right. All right. I do want to get to the Clippers. They're not here in Orlando anymore. But according to The Athletic, Paul George gave the Clippers some words of encouragement in the locker room after they were eliminated from the playoffs, just wanting them to commit to making another run together. And according to the report, that speech was met with some eye rolls. Now, PG does have a player option after next season. So does Kawhi. So those two are only committed for one more season, although they could be there much longer. Vince, what do you think is Paul George's future with the Clippers?
I think it's a wait and see thing, honestly. This team is right there. They're on the cusp of a championship opportunity. They're loaded. You can add another piece or two to upgrade. But their team right now is very good. They didn't have a great run in the playoffs. Well, let me say, they didn't have a great run against Denver in the playoffs. PG didn't play particularly well. But I think this is a wait-and-see moment, in my opinion. I think the organization next year looks and see how the first half of the season goes, and they'll make a decision from there. I think you get the vibe and it's like, maybe we should move on or not, because Paul George is Paul George. And that's a piece. If you keep him, he will do for your team. If not, you can get some pieces for him as well.
Now, look, this is the funny thing about the Clippers, is that as much as they were like, we're anti the glitz and glamour, we're the grit and grind, mm-hmm. but you advertise the grit and grind, you advertise that kind of like work ethic, and you really push that narrative almost in a manner of a Hollywood kind of storyline. And so, you know, when I look at the way the Clippers are built and I look at the way they want to play, I think Paul George is a very good fit. And we've talked so much about the, you know, last dance and all of these NBA dynasties. It takes time to build it. Yes, we are impatient here in 2020 and everybody expects this, but understand, LeBron James and the Miami Heat did not win it in their first year. You Correct. Look at the Boston Celtics in the Big Three. They only have one championship over the multiple years that they were together. It is hard and it can take time. So as much as there might have been some frustrations or eye rolls, ultimately, I think these guys got to continue building that continuity and they got to spend more time together. And I think they will possibly get over that hump.
And look, it's going to be
tougher
next year.
And I want to say this real quick, Rachel. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
I just want to say this. We have to remember that speech after the expectations of going to the finals to play the Lakers had just gone out the window. So
yes.
when somebody's giving a speech, a rah-rah speech about, hey, guys, next year we're going to – you don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
Point blank. Yeah. You can be my boy or not. This is not the time for that. You know, let me be mad. Let me, you know, be pissed about the way I played or how I let my team down or whatever. So, you know, we have to throw that in the count as well.
No, I think that's a excellent point, because the eye rolling can be as much for the situation or maybe only for the situation as opposed to the player or belie any chemistry issues. I will say it's going to get harder next year, right? You've got Steph Curry and the Warriors back, supposedly, you know, at full strength, as much as we can predict with health. And then, of course, you've got Kevin Durant and Kyrie in the East. You've got whoever wins this year's title is going to be something to contend with next year. So I think the path for the Clippers will be tougher. But that being said, they have really smart people in the front office and coaching staff, and I would bet on them to make the adjustments that they need to at least compete in that area. I'm very fascinated to see this team. I don't think their story is over yet by any means. All right, coming up, Adam Silver says his, quote, best guess for when next season will begin is in January. Does that make the most sense for the NBA? We will discuss next on The Jump. Richard has some scheduling ideas he'd like to discuss.
Oh, yeah, let's get into it.
Let's take a look at today's Dreammakers, brought to you by Sprite, concert promoter Live Nation, teaming up with LeBron James Group More Than a Vote to convert concert venues into polling sites for the upcoming election on November 3rd. Now, More Than a Vote has already successfully enlisted more than 20 sports arenas and stadiums to serve as polling sites as well, which is awesome and something that I would like to see all 30 teams do. I know that some of the teams have tried to and have had a little battle with their community there. So we're backing you guys, and we hope by the time Election Day rolls around.
Wait, I want to give a quick shout out to the Hawks.
Yeah.
I want to give a quick shout out to the Hawks and Lloyd Pierce, you know, for really, I remember they were talking about that. I was still a current player at the time, and we were talking about what they wanted to do. And I think that hit home, and it wasn't a, you know, they weren't saying, hey, what you guys want to do? But they wanted to do that for the city of Atlanta, and they felt that it was extremely important. And to see other teams kind of jumping on the bandwagon and doing that, that is major.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say is this. Hey, the voting and the opportunities and the arenas being open are for everyone.
Yes.
They're not just for, like, Democrats or Republicans. It's not a political thing. It's just to make sure that everyone has the opportunity across the world or across this entire country. That's what makes it awesome, is that when you're trying to open up those type of places and make sure that people have access to vote, because it's like you have parents and you have kids and you have teachers. Like, not everybody, it's not a day off. So I think it's a great gesture as Americans to make sure that everyone has the opportunity.
Absolutely. Democratic process. Now we're going to work on getting Election Day to be a national holiday. That's for the next election cycle. I'm Rachel Nichols. I am still here with Richard Jefferson and Vince Carter. And guys, I want to get to the NBA calendar, because Commissioner Adam Silver spoke with Bob Costas during a CNN streaming event this morning. He gave an update on where things stand for next season. Take a listen here.
When will it start? And will you have to have format changes? Will it be a shorter season, different playoff structure? Because we know that the virus will not be completely behind us come springtime or late winter.
My best guess is that even though, as you said, it'll be the 2021 season, that season won't start until 21. We said a week ago or so that the earliest we would start is Christmas of this year, but the more I'm learning, even listening to Dr. Fauci this morning, I continue to believe that we're going to be better off getting into January. The goal for us next season is to play a standard season, to your other part of your question, 82-game season and playoffs. And further, the goal would be to play games in home arenas in front of fans.
So there's a lot there, guys, because, look, playing in front of fans, especially in some states with governors that have banned gatherings of more than 20 people for a long time, look, if you're waiting for that, you could be waiting for a while. This idea of starting maybe now in January, which is 3 months after the NBA Finals. Remember, they had a four-month break already over this past spring and the beginning of the summer. When you look, Richard, at all of the different factors they're trying to work in here, when they could get some fans in the stands, when they could keep a national TV audience still interested in not having too much of a break, where do you think sort of the happy medium is?
I do not envy any of these individuals' jobs, because there is a lot here. Ultimately, you know, this is a fan sport. You want the fans there, but you also want to protect, you know, human health and human safety. And so, you know, you got to trust in the data and the science and saying, like, hey, we want to have fans there, so we're probably going to have to delay the start again. So, you know, you just got to kind of play it by ear, which is a weird thing when you're talking about billion-dollar industries trying to figure it out. But I personally, when we do get this all figured out in a year later, I want the NBA to be back on its normal schedule. I don't want to play through the summer and then having the NBA finals at the end of the summer or the fall. I kind of like the old traditional, you know, way we've always done it.
Well, guys, I'm going to take the other side of this, and I'm going to say, can you say load management? You best believe you're going to see load management with, you know, the season ending when it does, mm-hmm. and just the turnaround time. And it's nothing it's going to be a give and take. And I know the NBA, Adam Silver, wanted to kind of get away with that. That's why it was So many days in between. Now it's going to end up tightening up. If you're trying to play actually 82-game schedule, you might even see back-to-back-to-backs again, which was brutal. I don't know if you know, RJ, you didn't get to. You didn't have to worry about that. but, yeah, back-to-back-to-backs were brutal. But I tell you what, load management is going to be a real thing. You know, we thought we saw it before. Wait until now. Because think about the teams, the finals. Whether it goes 4 or 7, these guys need to get away from the game. And the organizations are worrying about one thing, their guys' health for the following season to go back to the finals or get into the playoffs. So load management is going to be a thing.
Well, I don't worry so much about a January start for that because it will be 3 months after the end of the NBA Finals and only two teams are in the NBA Finals. And remember, there's 8 teams at the bottom of the standings who didn't play. Your Hawks teammates, Vince, won't have played since last March, so it'll be almost a calendar year for them. So I don't worry so much about that being too tight. I almost worry on the other end of what you guys are saying about trying to cram in that 82-game season and when that would end. The back-to-back-to-backs that you're talking about possibly being, we don't know what the NBA has in mind. I know they want to keep those 82 games because of the money that comes in from the TV revenue, the local, regional RSN revenue, and possibly fans in the stands revenue. But gosh, I just...
Look at that. It looks so sad.
Right, all
so
those sad. Empty arenas.
Yeah, man.
I would just say this. The people who run the NBA are more optimistic than me if they think that they can have fans in the stands to any large degree across a large number of NBA arenas by the beginning of 2021.
But Rachel, let's add this too.
What I read, don't see it. Yeah.
Yeah, let's add this too. Now, the 8 teams that didn't make the playoffs, they're in their bubble now, and they're going to be playing. Yeah, I get it. It's what it is, but they're still playing basketball, and they've been going for a while. So they're going to need an opportunity to get away from it as well. So I don't know. Like I said, it's just I hate to be the one to have to kind of make that decision.
Yeah. No, you're totally fair. It's hard. And the hardest thing about it, too, is it's a moving target. And you heard Adam Silver say that. He said, listening to Dr. Fauci this morning, that's what makes it so complicated. Is normally in the NBA, we can plan for stuff. You guys spent an entire lifetime in the sport knowing what you would do 6 months from now on February 3rd, 22nd, because it was on your schedule. And of course, they can't do that now with anything, just like the rest of us can't do that with anything in 2020. So there you go. Right. We'll continue
can I ask
to
RJ
keep
a question?
Track of it. Yep.
Hey, RJ, can you imagine playing in the bubble? Like, watching it and being there is one thing, but can you put yourself in that situation? Like, I mean,
Look, the only thing I'll say about this is I was here when the Lakers ran out on the court and there was deafening silence, and the guys are just laughing and joking like, hey, everybody. You got to create – it is really weird, and you got to create your own energy. I don't envy – I envy what they're doing. I don't envy the environment that they're trying to do for the first time.
I will only say this, Vince, that there are a couple hundred people in the building, and that if you were still playing and did one of your 360s, there would be a lot of
You would still hear the noise. You would still hear it, even from outside.
But what you're saying, it basically is like the 10 o'clock, the 10 a.m. consolation game in AAU. When you lost, you had to go play that morning game when there was nobody there. That's the vibe you're feeling right now. Okay, I got it.
But then they put in the noise and the crowd. It's all good. It's all going to be good by game time.
Coming up,
we're still on this show. We got the latest edition of Bubble Chronicles. We will discuss what it's like being an NBA photographer here on the NBA campus amid a pandemic with the league's manager of social content, Jim Ice. Keep it locked to the jump. Jim Porton's coming up next.
Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
Yo, what up? I heard y'all talking about my man Ice today. Ice is, man, listen, I know when I see Ice, it's a big game. You know what I'm saying? Ice be it every big game. He get all the content. I know if a guy that had a big game and they talking to the camera or whatnot, it's probably because of Ice. So big shout out to my man Ice being on The Jump today.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm still here with Richard Jefferson. Now, Vince Carter is going to rejoin us in the next segment. But first, I want to welcome in our guest here in Orlando, manager of social content with the NBA, sneakerhead extraordinaire, Jim Porten. But you know him on Instagram as Jim Ice, joining the show. Thank you so much
for being
here. I am thrilled we got you. And we're going to talk about pictures and your work and all of that, but we got to talk about the shoes first. What are you even wearing today?
Today I have the Travis Scott Jordan 1s, which I was actually at the shoot in Houston when he joined the set, too, so that was cool when he gave out pairs to you guys.
Yeah. Well, by the way, he gave out pairs to Scottie Pippen and Tracy McGrady.
Correct.
I feel like Rachel's saying something. Is Scottie?
Oh, Paul Pierce also, right?
Paul Pierce.
Yeah, me, yeah. Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
All right. No, it's fine, really.
Rachel's making a statement. Is that something that a lot of the times the players like talk to you about when they see your shoes and kind of what you're wearing?
So, you know what, like at games, for the most part, I'm wearing my quote-unquote work uniform, so it's all black. With NBA vest, so the shoes is kind of my way to be unique and show off my style. So I always have, you know, cool shoes.
Oh, you always have them. You always have the shoes on. Like my shoe game is not. What are you gonna have? What are you gonna be rocking next? What are you gonna be rocking tonight? How many shoes did you bring to the bubble?
Okay, so I brought like 6 pairs, but I've got sent like 10. 12 pounds.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Also, by the way, I have seen that if you are particularly shooting a particular player that night and you are not wearing shoes that are either his shoe or something that at least is in the family of his shoe, there are some issues. So he is very good at managing that as well. You've been doing this for such a long time, Jim. What is the challenge for you of being a photographer now inside the bubble? Because you've been here since the end of June, is that right?
Yeah, so left LA on June 28th.
Oh, my Lord.
Yep, been here since day one before the players got here. I mean, challenges, it's just kind of what we're dealing with in the world, social distancing. Like we're as content producers, we're so used to being on the floor, walking right up to guys, but like right now we have to be socially distanced. So that's been the biggest challenge, but there's a ton of positives with being here. We've got all the teams in one place, no travel, been able to go to multiple games in one day, 6 practices in one day at the beginning when all 22 were practicing. Yeah. So the positives definitely outweigh any of the negatives because there's just everything is here.
Yeah.
You know, right in front of us.
What's been your favorite part about being here in the bubble? Like, what is it, like in this experience, which you're like, wow, this is something that I would not be able to do.
Do you have a photograph that is your favorite bubble picture, too?
I don't know if I haven't taken my favorite bubble picture yet because it'll be at the championship. But just the history of it all, just the fact that, like, we were able to come back and put this all on.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that it's been such a success, you know, it's been great. I mean, just being here, like, during the year, I'm always trying to get to the best games, and it's not always possible with travel. Mm-hmm. So just being able to be here, it is possible.
Yeah.
Some of these pictures we're scrolling through are so cool. They become the iconic moments, the way players like to remember themselves. I know a lot of the guys you capture ask you for the pictures.
Yep.
Some of them get them printed and put in their homes.
For sure.
You took one of Fred VanVleet that I think he's going to want to keep around for a while.
So this is from the finals.
Oh, okay, this is the finals last year.
Was from the finals.
And tell me more about that one.
So it was after game 4 when he had gotten the 7 stitches.
Oh, okay, when he got the tooth knocked out.
He got the tooth knocked out. So this photo here. So just casually talking to him after the game, oh, how you feeling? He's like, no, I'm good. And then he showed me, he opened up his mouth, and I was like, oh, can I take a picture of that? He's like, yeah, no problem. So he got a phone. I took some pictures of him without the phone. Then he got a phone call as we were talking. So I just kept shooting, and then that picture looked the best. And I gave it to him. He posted it first. It went viral. Drake was commenting on it. It became like a huge meme in Toronto just to show how tough he was. It was on T-shirts. A kid was that photo for Halloween, which was really cool.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So Fred had reposted it on his story that day. So, like, yeah, this photo just became so popular that it's become one of my favorite photos just because of how viral it went. And it just showed how tough he was at the time.
What's crazy is that you sent me a photo. You sent me a couple photos. But one of the photos is, like, you have me with my son. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's the photo I always show to everybody. And I was like, hey, look, this is a Jim Ice photo. And it was like, oh, that's your twin. Yeah. And then, like, later you had some, like, you remember, like, my boys grew up, you know, around the game, but all of a sudden you have Bron there, and little Richard got super scared, so he's hiding behind me and Bron's messing with him. But you have been able to capture, like, so many, like, candid moments, not just like, hey, in the photos. What's, like, the most, like, candid one that guys saw later and they were like, yo, how did you even, like, how were you there, how did you catch that? What's one of those photos?
You know what, that's a tough question. I'd have to think about that one, but one that comes to mind, when we were at the White House in 2015 with the Warriors, Steve Kerr and Steph were walking away from the White House And I just shot them from behind, which normally, like, why would you shoot people from behind and not show their faces? But the two of them just walking together with, you know, it was just their backs, but just the overall scenery, and they were both dressed up. Like, that was one that Steph was like, that's a really cool shot.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Because those moments are, it's what you guys say that you miss the most about the game later. Mm-hmm. It's not what happens on the court. Every former athlete that we talk to says, oh, man, I miss the times on the bus. I miss the times in the locker room. I miss the times just hanging out on the road. And that's what you capture so well. And the fact that the guys feel comfortable with you is such a huge secret to your success and such a credit to you, because these are athletes who are, frankly, trained by the world to just sort of not trust people, right? Because unfortunately, they've had things happen to them or people have broken that trust where they say, I don't want that guy around. And with you, I know that they feel they trust you in all of those intimate moments. And that's so special. But their children and things, I mean, this is big. Now, when you were a kid, I know you grew up in New Jersey. You love basketball. Mm-hmm. I just want to apologize here on national television for anything Richard Jefferson may have done to you and what your memory were of those teams.
Yeah, so I was a season ticket holder. My father and I, we used to go to games, New Jersey Nets games. They weren't so good. We started in 1997. They went to the playoffs that year after drafting Keith Van Horn. But then in the summer...
Look at that.
Look at that. Yeah,
the summer of 2001, the Nets made a huge trade that summer, bringing on somebody who would lead them to the finals.
Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd. But Richard was a rookie that year. And so that photo was actually at one of the fan appreciation nights.
Was it?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
At the arena.
That's crazy. The one thing I'll say is crazy is that now it's great. You see that, and I have guys that were kids now showing up with their kids because that was 20 years ago, man. Yeah. It's mind blowing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, team went to the finals. All the success of that team. Our tickets doubled in price, and then I was going to college. So, you know, we couldn't continue with
the season
tickets.
Priced you out of the market.
Priced me out, but we still went to a lot of games the next year.
So could you really, just stop being so successful, Richard. That hurts the people.
I blame Jason Kidd, I promise you. Like, I was just a contributor to the success that he brought.
We generally blame Jason Kidd for everything, and it goes okay on this show. Jim, I'm so thrilled we were finally able to do this.
I appreciate you guys having me.
I cannot stress enough to go to Instagram, look for Jim Ice.
Yeah.
Follow him because it will be all the behind-the-scenes pictures of some of your favorite NBA players. Just those moments.
Follow the NBA. NBA on campus. NBA Kicks. Yeah.
Oh, NBA on campus. I did want to mention that before we leave. That's a great initiative and something that's been a lot of fun if people want to know a little bit more about the bubble too, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, definitely inspired by, you know, what other accounts are doing. NBA Bubble Life did a great job.
Shout out Nick DiPaola.
Yep. aggregating everything. So, you know, we've just been sowing another side with a lot of off the court stuff on those accounts, Twitter and Instagram.
I absolutely love it. All right. We will have more to come for you after this break. Jamal Murray, yet to have that kind of scoring explosion, right, that we saw earlier in the playoffs. How can the Nuggets get the most out of him offensively? We will discuss. Stick around. You're watching The Jump. Someone get this corner back here. In my DNA, it's not a typo. I'm protecting my soul. I'll end it on a high note. I know that I set a high goal. They said...
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today. And in part by Quibi. Now streaming the Emmy Award-winning series, #FreeRayShawn.
The best of five WNBA semis tonight. The Sun have a 1-0 lead in their series against MVP Asia Wilson and the top-seeded Aces. They play game two at 7 Eastern. Then, with their game postponed from Sunday because of an inconclusive COVID-19 test, they will now play game one between the Lynx and Storm, ESPN2. And the ESPN app. Great to see that game get back on track. And it's crunch time here on The Jump. With the Raptors season over, Marc Gasol entering unrestricted free agency, and there is a rumor he might consider returning to Europe to wrap up his career. Richard, do you think that's the right move for him?
Well, look, he's won everything that he can win here, and he's such a big international player that, you know, there's rules about how many American players that you can have on your team, so guys like him actually get an increased value because he is European. So it depends on whatever he wants, and it's great to be in a position to be able to do what you want.
And to add to that, he definitely will be featured there. But he's a former teammate of mine, and he's a family guy. And he gets an opportunity to be around his family and love up on them. I could see it not being a bad thing for him.
Love that. All right. Enes Kanter tweeted this video of him with Marcus Smart yesterday saying, "We couldn't settle the fight in the locker room, so we took it out to the pool." They got heated, of course, in the locker room after game two. But, Vince, it looks like they made up just fine after the win. I'm concerned here
watching this,
issues?
By the
way. Yeah, exactly.
Chemistry issues? Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
But I tell you what. This is a recipe for disaster.
It, but, hey, it is. But look at it. It tells me this. Marcus Smart is pretty strong, bro, because he didn't – Enes didn't just take him and throw him in the water either.
No, Enes is 6'10", like 260 pounds. Like, Marcus wasn't
that
many.
He just tossed him, get out of here.
Yeah.
Safety first, guys. Safety first. They need you.
RJ said Marcus is one big muscle. Let's talk about Jamal Murray, guys. His scoring average through the first two games against the Lakers. It's on par with his play versus the Clippers, but we still haven't seen the outburst that we got accustomed to in the first two rounds, right? He dropped 44 times. Two of those were 50-point games. So, Richard, can the Nuggets get more out of Murray moving forward in this series, or is the matchup just not there for him?
Well, look, the Lakers have that. That's been what's so impressive. Even Frank Vogel said that he believes that their defense can be their third quote-unquote superstar. Mm-hmm. And so I think that Jamal Murray's going to have an outburst, and it could be in a half, it could be in a quarter, but I think the Lakers are doing a really, really good job in containing him. I think Jamal needs to keep doing it. They had the lead with 2 seconds to go, so you don't want to look at what more you can get, just how to kind of shore up the way they're playing earlier in games.
Well, yeah, he was 8 for 19 shooting, 2 for 9 from three. Ugh. But at the same time, I want to see them put him in positions. We're seeing him scoring. Put him in positions where he has the big guard him on the perimeter, where he can get to the basket, get fouled, get some free throws first, and work his way out to the three-point line. I think pick and roll with he and Jokic, of course, Jokic demanding the attention he does, he just needs to get some open shots and just play the game that he's been playing. Like you said, there's been a lot of 40 balls coming from him. He mm-hmm. can break out of this.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got to, right? So much of their offense is predicated on both of those guys being hot when it's just one or the other, more limiting
for them. Em.
But they will need them both as they try tonight to come out of that 2-0 hole. All right, that is it for the day. Thank you so much to Jim Fortin for joining us. The Jump is back tomorrow, 3 o'clock Eastern, ESPN.